It's good to see you all. I'm glad. I hope that you had good vacation time and so forth, and that now you're ready to get back at it in seriousness. When I thought about using this passage, I really was just going to do one sermon. But then when I started thinking about it, I really thought, why not have one on each? And then once we had done two of them, I thought, why not have one that pulls it back together? And then we had, I'm not calling Chris out here, but we had worship commission, and he said he didn't really get the point of the way, the sermon on the way. And so I got thinking, okay, how can I reposition this whole series? Because it's something that we're used to hearing. And so you have to sort of get through the layers that you have, that you bring to this particular passage. And as I have been reflecting on this, I was thinking about coming up with some kind of design, some kind of drawing, and because I'm a visual person. And anyway, then today I got thinking, let's begin at a different point. And so what I'd like to start with is what is the difference between having Jesus say, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life, and no one comes to the Father but by me, and what preceded the New Testament? So what about, Adam positioned it within the context of John, but what if we position it within the context of Israel in the Old Testament? What were the leadership models or the social organizational models that we encounter in Israel? What does it start with? Well, okay, creation story and the so forth, but then it melds into patriarchy. So you've got Noah, you've got Abraham, Isaac, and the patriarchs, the fathers, right? Patriarch as in fathers. And then what comes after them? What does it slide into? Not quite, not yet. First, it's, remember Deborah, what judges. So it slides into the judges, and what were the judges really? They were in a, go ahead. They were dispute settlers, or if you take it a little bit, if you elevate it a little bit, they were sort of governors. They governed over the people, partly through bringing God's light into their conflicts. So it was the judges were, in a certain sense, well, what happened when Moses was spending all day long with large lines of people coming to have him rule over disputes? Yeah. And then what did he say? He said, appoint people to be available to talk to. It's like it's that's in Genesis, not Genesis, Exodus, yeah. And so they're coming into the land and so forth. And they begin this organization to break up the people into these different groups. And then it distributed the work of Moses as a counselor to a bunch of people. And so in a sense, there's a natural flow out of that into the judges as a more formal appointment. And then what comes after the judges? Prophets. There's somebody in between. Why did they need prophets? So you've got Samuel, right? And Samuel's there, and he's sort of in this in-between position in a sense. And the people come to him, and what do they say? Give us a king. And he says, what does he do? Does he say, okay, we'll give you a king? No, he says, let me talk to God about this. And God says, hey, look, Samuel, this isn't about you. This is a rejection of me. The people are rejecting me and asking for a king because they want to do what? Be like everybody else, you know? So, in other words, God was very disappointed. See, you know, this is the thing that kills me in this current political situation. The church tends to idolize the kings when the kings were seen as a rejection of God. Duh. You know, I mean, talk about taking the worst feature of the Old Testament and exalting it. And how long? So David gets in there, and what does he do? What does David do in terms of social organization and structure? He does what? He wants to build a temple, right? He wants to build a palace. Does he in part enslave his own people to do these projects? You know? Well, no, not the temple. He doesn't get there. He doesn't get the opportunity to do it. But the fact of the matter is, he ends up treating them just like the Pharaohs did, in a certain sense, you know, except it was their own project, you know. So then what happens? Kingship lasted forever, right? No, it fell apart. It was a united kingdom for a very short time. Solomon comes along in all his wisdom. Then the thing gets divided up. So that, as a social structure, kingship lasted a very short time and ended up with a divided kingdom, not a united people as a light unto the world. And then what comes on? Captivity. But then, Jackie, what did you say? Prophets. You know, the prophets are prophets. They're the ones who come along and they say, oh, these kings and all these people, there's so many voices leading you astray, but I have heard God's voice. And I'm sharing it with you. So the prophets come along to confront what's going on in their way of being God's people. And, you know, I jumped over the Ten Commandments, but, you know, you get you're in Genesis there, and in the thick of Genesis, you get these Ten Commandments as a law that in a sense, the kings are expected to preserve, but it doesn't really work that way. In fact, they kind of forget that it exists, you know, and Deuteronomy is rediscovering the law and bringing it back to the people of Israel. So you've got this thing going on that's super back and forth in terms of the success of the project, the success of being a nation, being a people under the rule of God, under the leadership of God. It's a failed project. I won't say, so why would we try 2,000 years later or 3,000? But I'll let you think about that one. So the question then becomes, okay, you've got Jesus, and he's been coming along, and his disciples are trying to sort this all out, you know, because there are all these active prophets and so forth in the time of Jesus who are all prophesying about the end, they're prophesying about all kinds of stuff. You've got Jesus in the midst of all of these voices. And he says, I'm the way, I'm the truth, and I'm the life. So he, what would you say these three things are? What are these three things? What's the way? It's a verb, right? It's a direction. It's a pathway. It's a way of following, right? And so Jesus says, I'm the way. And then, as I said 3 weeks ago, the people who were following Christ in the early part of Acts and middle part of Acts, they were known as people of the way. So this was an important enough idea for them that following Jesus is a way of being, a way of following, a way of imitating his path. Now, how does that contrast with law to you? Jesus said, I didn't come to destroy the law. I came to fulfill the law. So in part, you could say, well, how does it relate to law? Well, Jesus was saying that we've got this wrong in the way that we follow the law. The law was to point to a way of living. And, you know, I always, with the story of Jesus in there in Luke, where the young man comes up and says, what must I do to be saved? And he enters into this discussion, love your neighbor as yourself, the summary of the law and so forth. And I always imagine that when Jesus said to him, love your neighbor as yourself, you know, or he echoed back to him, you've said it correctly. You've summarized the law perfectly. What does the guy say to him? In response, when Jesus affirms his answer, he says, the man says back to him, who is my neighbor? But who is my neighbor? And see, and then Jesus tells the story about the Good Samaritan, that whole story. But the point is, for me, the man wants to go. I think the guy was a lawyer. It refers to him as a learned man. And I think he was probably... he may have even done his dissertation on interpretations of the neighbor. You know, so you've got four categories of neighbor. There's your neighbor who's a Jew, you know, one of the people of God. There's the neighbor here that's a foreigner. There's the neighbor that's, what else? Is just an acquaintance, a casual acquaintance, part of the larger community, something, but still is a Jew. So there are different ways you can look at this neighbor question, from issues of related to proximity and to similarity, but then there are also broader definitions of the neighbor. And since you have to love your enemy as yourself, you know, where does that fit into this complex of who is my neighbor? So I think the guy was ready to engage with Jesus about his dissertation. You know, he really thought he'd have a chance to shine in front of Jesus. But then what happens? Jesus goes to a story. And Jesus goes to a story, and the story shows that the people who think they know are wrong. The people who, the ones who don't know, the Samaritan, simply acts out of human kindness and takes care of the person in need. And so it flips the whole story around, and he says, so who was the neighbor to the one in need? Well, the one who responded. It's not based on race. It's not based on theology. It's not based on anything like that. It's based on acting. And so Jesus is there in his example and in his way of being present with the 12. He is over and over again demonstrating that this is a faith that's lived out through actions. It's not about interpretation of the law. It's about being something. And so when we get to this, the way, the truth, and the Lord, and the life, how do we imagine the three of them together? For me, I begin with, as I said just a minute ago, that the way is a direction. It's a way of being engaged and walking. So what is the truth? When we say truth, what is God saying, or what is Jesus saying about himself? He's what? He's good. He's right.
The debate, the heart of the, all of the debating and back and forth, and he's complete. It is him.
Right.
He's the whole picture.
Yeah, you don't need to go about philosophizing about the Ten Commandments or what social structure is right. No. I'm the truth. And so when you look at me as Jesus living here and you see me, you also see the Father, and that is the light. You know? Other things that you think of?
You see word there.
Yes.
For that matter, it's a very culturally significant word, because it's the same word that Aristotle.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's a common, and you know, yeah, virtue. Right. It's a common concept, and it's one of the virtues. And, you know, then we get into as well the fruit of the Spirit and how that relates to this complex of ideas and ways of being and so forth. So let's take it as that. The truth is something that's not pointing to a particular truth. It's pointing to Jesus as one who demonstrated what it is to be true. So you know, you can look at this wall and you put your level on it. Mel, what do you ever use the word, well, it's true, for the walls are true? That's kind of an old way of using that term. But we used to say that this is true, a scale is true, various things that were true, meaning they're accurate, they're just, they're right. So Yes. Yeah. 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 And that's why I last, when I spoke on this, I used to the concept of transparency, because, it really irked me one time. There's a guy, Mel Lowen, who's I really like, but he worked with USAID and a lot in Africa and different places. But USAID is a huge organization for international development and so forth. And he claimed when we were talking that no penny is not accounted for. Well, the funny thing is, he was the one who wrote this little thing that I referred to 2 weeks ago, where there's participation, there's accounting, and then there's accountability. And accountability, I said, is something that when we look across the system, are they saying the same thing to the internal audience as well as the external audience? So integrity is very close to transparency in that sense of things. And so in other words, when I was saying participation, that was sort of a how do they make decisions and who's involved in the decision-making process? And unless that is disclosed, there's a serious gap, right? If you can lie on the accounts, because you can always cook the books, right? You can anyway. But then accountability in terms of looking across the organization, that's something that if you're not saying the same thing internally that what you're showing externally, you've got a problem. Excuse me, I need to get that. I started doing some speech therapy to see if I could, that would help me with this raspiness in my voice, but. So I'm having fun blowing bubbles into water. But Dorothy has been praising me for my good behavior, since I hate stuff like that. But anyway, so truth has to do with integrity. Truth has to do with transparency. Truth has to do with being right. And Jesus points himself right in the same in the sense of I would say justice. And because when you get into right, in French and in Spanish, I think too, droit, tu droit, straight ahead, going to the right, going to the left, gauche. Droit, that word of going right, or that word of straight ahead, is the same word as that's used for representing the law. So anyway, part of and law, and it's also the word for justice, or a word for justice. So anyway, you lose that in English, but it's in many other languages. So then you get to life. And I was reading something earlier this week. I was reading something earlier this week. It's an online series that I can't think of the title of right now, but in it, they talked about this, the cross as relationship with God, relationship within the community, and so forth. But the thing that they added to this is that this notion of groundedness and being connected to the earth. So they added an eco piece to and a justice piece to the cross being something that's grounded in the earth. And I'm trying to think about how to work with that in a more effective way, but then come back to this. And when we look at life, when we think of how Paul refers to Jesus often, it says, and in scripture it says, now the quotation, in him we all have our being. You know, we talk about Jesus as being the through whom all things were created, and Jesus is the one who sustains us. So it's not simply life in a simplistic way, but we can say that Jesus identifies himself here with all of life. So he's not simply the source of life, he's the sustainer of life, and he's been there since the creation. So the concept of Jesus being way, truth, and life really becomes a very rich tapestry of pieces. And so what does that do when we think about social organization? When we think about how we gather together, when our faith is not based on what we are in the sense of, well, it is based on us being a gathered people, but I'm saying it's not really something we have to get right in terms of form. Right? It's much more grounded in who we are and how we are together in our being as a community that honors God, that honors each other, and is grounded in life.
Mm-hmm. It feels like that really, there was a lot of gatekeeping.
Yes.
And so it's a picture of who he is with this, all of the package come directly to me. It removes the gatekeeping.
Right. And see, and then, and just think about it though. As soon as Catholicism formalizes, what?
The gatekeeping
comes front and center. And then eventually you call the head of the church the Pope, the Father. So the Pope supplants Jesus, along with a whole bunch of other saints and angels and so forth. But Jesus says, no, it's I am the one that's the gateway to the Father. And so I guess part of the thing I'm saying is that it's always been a social battle as to how to be faithful to God's calling. And so when we think about the future of this congregation and where we go, it's not about the building, it's not about the structure. It's about how we, in this place and time, are being faithful to what God calls us to be. And how do we demonstrate the way, the truth, and the life of Christ? And I'll just end it there.